The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position of ONTV's management, staff, or board of directors.
Detroit basketball!
Hello and welcome into Views from the Sidelines. I'm your host, Joey Tysik. Across from me is Malik Hill.
Can I interrupt you really quickly?
Yeah, go for it.
I think we need to change the intro soon.
I know. I've thought about it, actually.
It's like just now hitting me that this, the theme to this show, honestly, should change.
Yeah. No, I'm ready.
Because those disappointments, we'll get to them later. Yeah. It's not a good look.
No, I've thought about that, too, that it's maybe time to upgrade a little bit. So I'll think about it. The other thing that I forgot to do was load up the U of M fight song to play for you.
I'm not mad. I didn't think about that. I appreciate you taking the time to think about that because, man, oh, man, I can't believe it still.
Yeah.
I still can't believe it.
You've got U of M in the national championship game. They took down Alabama this past weekend. 27-20. It wasn't pretty. It was a little scary at times, but they got it done. Malik, how do you feel?
Listen, at the start of the fourth quarter, like 2 or 3 minutes in, I had a text fully loaded to a mass group of friends that all went to Michigan that said Michigan was only built to win the Big Ten.
Mm.
We're not built to win national championships like Ohio State.
Right.
I had that literally sitting in like my draft, watching the game, ready to hit send. And then things got weird, even more weird than they already were. Alabama couldn't finish the job. Michigan had one of their best drives of the Harbaugh era.
Mm-hmm.
Tie game. They put Jake Thaw in. It doesn't matter. They benched Samaj Morgan after he muffs a punt.
Yeah.
And then at the last minute, you put the older walk-on in and he muffs a punt too.
Which?
Special teams was a nightmare.
Got downed at the 1 yard line.
And luckily he was able to catch it and fall down at the one. But yeah, from that touchdown on, Michigan just took control.
Mm-hmm.
Two Blake Corum runs turned to a touchdown, and then they stop Alabama.
Yeah,
in four tries.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched the replay of that stop and the celebration after at least 50 times, and I'll probably watch it at least 50 more before the game Monday night. Michigan is playing in the national championship.
Mm-hmm. They finally broke through. They finally did what they were supposed to do.
2-3 years ago, even at times this year, I doubted that this could ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
That text that I was going to send to the group has been a thought in my head nonstop.
Yeah.
Throughout the year, that what if they're still just not built for this?
Especially
what if they're just built to win the Big Ten?
Especially when you get the first play of the game, J.J. McCarthy throws a pick.
Yeah.
Just
a weird in between, not sure whether to throw it out or throw it to Roman Wilson. So he throws in between where an Alabama player is. And luckily he was standing out of bounds.
Mm.
Michigan's defense.
Man, they were awesome.
They were locked in.
They were awesome.
The 5 sacks in the first half. I haven't seen that front line. They've been very good all season. They were elite against Alabama. They were better on offensive and defensive line. Now, Alabama took over in the third quarter and their line kind of got it going.
Yeah.
But it wasn't close for the most part. Michigan was better in the trenches. And they were the better team overall, really.
Yeah.
If you wipe away the special teams mistakes, Michigan probably wins this game by at least like 2 touchdowns in regulation.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go to overtime. But Michigan didn't make it easy on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they got just enough from Blake Corum, who he cemented himself as a Michigan legend, maybe the best running back in Michigan history. He broke the record for rushing touchdowns in program history. That touchdown run in overtime was beautiful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The jump cut at the line, the two cuts afterwards, and breaking the tackles going into the end zone.
Yeah.
That run, like, summed up the type of running back he's been
and he had
his 4 years at Michigan.
He had a fairly slow game up until the fourth quarter in overtime.
He had, like, a 30-yard run in the first quarter. He had a few, like, 8-9 chunk-yard chunks in the second and third. But, yeah, that last drive, that fourth and two on their own 30, when he rolls out and catches that pass and takes it like 40 yards, they made plays when they needed to.
Yeah.
That play.
I think you got to give a lot of credit to Sherrone Moore, too.
Both coordinators.
Like
Sherrone Moore and Jesse Minter did everything that I said he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
He confused and frustrated Jalen Milroe.
Yeah.
And Sherrone Moore, even though that third quarter.
Yeah. Well,
those are the times where Sherrone Moore frustrates me.
Yeah.
Because the first half was creativity
mm-hmm.
and taking advantage of mismatches. The crossing routes were wide open almost like every drive in the first half. And Alabama was just having problems.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter again, he was drawing up stuff that was just letting them march down the field. So.
Yeah. And even though JJ missed some passes.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have the cleanest game. The stat line is still clean. No turnovers. He hit passes when he needed to hit them. He threw the touchdown pass to Blake Corum. He threw the touchdown pass to Tyler Morris,
mm-hmm.
who caught that crossing route and took it like 30-something yards and outran Alabama defensive players. How about that ACC speed? And I think even if that ball doesn't get tipped, it's still a completion of Roman Wilson. He put so much juice on that throw, that post route that Roman Wilson ran, that when it got tipped by the linebacker, it was still a perfect spiral.
Yeah.
It just changed the trajectory and went up higher.
Roman had to make a play on that ball.
So yeah.
And it probably would have been a cleaner pass.
A legendary Michigan football play in history.
Mm-hmm.
Him going up and making that catch and then making a cut and getting like 6 or 7 more yards.
Yeah.
All of our most important players stepped up
mm-hmm.
when they needed to.
Right.
And they made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of words.
Yeah.
Reacting to the fact that they actually did it.
Again, they also kind of put all the haters to rest where everybody was like, oh, well, you can't beat Nick Saban in a playoff game. Harbaugh completely outcoached him.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people are taking away from this game. Is that Nick Saban got out-coached for once. It doesn't happen very often.
Part of it is the coordinator advantage. Because Jesse Minter versus, oh my God, his name is escaping me right now. Former Notre Dame quarterback, former Notre Dame offensive coordinator for a season, Tommy Rees, came over to Alabama this season, did a solid job, not that great for Alabama fans. And Jesse Minter he coached circles around him.
Yeah.
Jalen Milroe could never get fully comfortable. He can never hit those deep shots that he loves hitting. And that defense was, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I loved how aggressive they were. They played clean, no targetings, nothing crazy. Just really good high-level defense.
Yeah. I will say Jalen Milroe, I think his future is pretty bright. He could be fun.
It could be. Alabama has a lot of things to fix, though.
Yeah.
And one of those things... I don't know if you saw, there's a clip that somebody put out, it was today or yesterday. The first play of the season for Jalen Milroe where he scored was a skipped snap to him that he had to drop down and pick up off the ground and take 30 yards for a rushing touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So the season started with a messed up snap.
Yeah.
And in the most important game of the season, several messed up snaps.
Yeah.
And clear miscommunication and anger between the center and Jalen Milroe.
Mm-hmm.
And the last play of the game in overtime, a low snap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not sure what they do to figure that one out. That was rough.
Mm-hmm. So now U of M sitting in the national title game, and they will be playing Washington, who defeated Texas in the Sugar Bowl after they almost blew it late in the game. Because at first, Washington looked like they were going to run away with the game, I thought, personally. Michael Penix was on point. Quinn Ewers was struggling quite a bit. It seemed
Can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
You just understated that Michael Penix performance.
I know, but
on point doesn't even describe.
Yeah.
What he might have cemented himself as a top five pick in the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about perfection?
Yeah.
And hitting receivers like that are somewhat tightly covered, right in the hands. Besides Michael Vick, I don't think I've seen a prettier lefty release besides his.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how he almost every pass he throws, he knows exactly how to throw it
mm-hmm.
and where to put it.
Yeah.
It was something.
And like you said, there was multiple times, and I'm trying to remember though. There was one, I can't remember if he threw it to Polk or Adunze, but
was it a touchdown or the one on the sideline?
Yeah, there's the sideline one.
The one on the sideline, I think it was to I think it was Romo Adunze.
Yeah.
The one over the shoulder.
It was like, yeah, where, a bucket drop.
Listen. There are NFL quarterbacks that can't make that throw.
Yeah.
Like it was incredible watching. Mm-hmm. It was like the Joe Burrow LSU playoff run.
Yeah.
Where everything was on time, everything was in the bucket. There were almost no flaws right. from that LSU offense in that playoff and almost for the whole season, let alone.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that performance against Texas, they barely made any mistakes.
Yeah. Do you think Michael Penix is upset about losing the Heisman to Jaden Daniels?
He's probably gotten over it, but the rest of the country reacting to it probably makes up for whatever he feels.
Yeah.
Because people are starting to realize he probably got robbed.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate. I think Jaden Daniels is a great prospect. I just don't know if he's fully shown his potential just yet. And I feel like we've seen Michael Penix at his best. So, I don't know. It was unfortunate. But that late night game was fun. It was a lot of scoring like I think we expected. And Texas finally kind of figured it out towards the end. They had a chance to pull off the upset, but it just didn't happen.
I think there was some pressure in Quinn Ewers' face on that last throw,
mm-hmm.
and he had to throw up kind of a lob.
Yeah, he did.
That receiver was like wide open,
mm-hmm.
and like near the front of the end zone. If Quinn Ewers was able to throw a bullet pass, it would have like hit him in his chest,
yeah,
or right in his face.
Mm-hmm.
But that lob made it so the Washington DB could knock it out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Washington did just enough and built enough ground in the first half.
Yeah,
to get away in the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the one thing I wanted to go back to really quick on Michigan-Alabama. Were you terrified on that final drive when Alabama, and they kept showing their kicker on the sideline, talking about he's the best kicker in the nation, blah, 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 blah. Did that make you nervous?
You're talking about Alabama's kicker?
Yeah.
On which drive do you mean?
The final drive. Like before, like when
After Michigan scored?
Yeah.
Or when it was 2020?
So like Alabama had after 2020 when Alabama had the chance to go down and hit the game-winning field goal. But Michigan got the stops, and they got sacks.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Because
Alabama had a chance to win the game.
I forgot after they tied it, Michigan still had to get a stop.
Yeah.
For some reason in my mind, I remember it being before they scored the 20.
No, it was after.
Yeah.
And they kept showing, what's his name, Reichard or something.
I mean, by the time, after they made like the first down stop, mm-hmm. I could tell the defense was still in the zone.
Yeah.
So, I was still nervous because obviously Alabama still could have done something.
Mm-hmm.
But after that first down stop, I calmed down a little, realized the defense was still locked in. They made another play. Then I was like, Jalen Milroe isn't about to do something incredible on this third down.
Right.
Like, this situation is really tight. Their offense has been up and down all game.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was crazy because I was like, oh, man. Of course, Michigan, in this weird scenario, they're going to face one of the best kickers.
And it was under a minute, too. And Alabama's offense isn't known for, those quick drives.
Right. But he's one of the few college kickers that's, like, consistently 50-plus. So, I don't know. I was worried about it. But
if they got there, I would have been terrified.
Yeah. But Michigan's defense, yes, again, stepped up. So, now, Michigan, Washington, national championship. How do you feel about this game?
I'm not sugarcoating anything. I'm going like 10% logic and like 90% fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking Michigan. I want it more than anything.
Yeah.
I want them to finally do this and shut everybody up.
Mm-hmm.
And just it's my dream come true for this to happen. I'm picking Michigan.
Go to a conclusion.
I'm picking Michigan because go blue. I'm picking Michigan because I bleed maize and blue from an actual like analytical standpoint.
Yeah.
Jesse Minter, I thought his game plan against Alabama was going to be the biggest ever. Trying to contain Michael Penix is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Michael Penix did have a stretch during the season where he was kind of average.
Yeah.
They played close to Arizona. They played close to Oregon State. Now, the weather was a factor in that, but it was still close.
Yeah.
And they played close to their rival, Washington State. Each of those games, Michael Penix made 3 or 4 throws like he always has that set the game apart and just made a few, just enough big plays to win the game.
Yeah.
Jesse Minter has to figure out how to stop their deep passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's figured out how to completely stop it.
Yeah.
Now, I think Michigan can score on Washington's defense. Many teams have shown that they can.
Right.
And I have confidence that Sharon Moore still has some stuff up his sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he calls that flea flicker at the right time in this game.
Yeah.
Because it was wide open. Mm-hmm. It was a wide open pass, but they sent a blitz at the right time. Alabama sent a blitz at the right time. And Blake Corum didn't have time to get the ball back to J.J. McCarthy cleanly.
Right.
So I have confidence Sharon Moore can get points on the Washington defense, even though they're good and they play physical.
Yeah.
But this is the game of Jesse Minter's life.
I think Michigan's offense might run smoother. They might be able to run the ball more. We saw Texas take some big gashes into Washington's defense on the ground. What's their running back? C.J. Baxter?
C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue, the backup.
Yeah. They both like had some big chunk plays. So I think Blake Corum should be probably, he could have a better game than he did against Alabama. The other thing, too, I think that Michigan did good, and it's not necessarily a one-to-one comparison, but they did really good against Jermaine Burton of Alabama.
Will Johnson, best corner in college football.
Yeah, he's...
And he's only a sophomore.
Played really good. Now, granted, again, Washington...
They got 3 NFL receivers.
Their weapons are a little different,
yeah.
But... that's a good sign, I think, going into that game.
I have confidence that Will Johnson will do a good job against Romo Odunze,
mm-hmm.
who I assume that will be his starting main matchup. But yeah, those other two guys, it's going to be really tough. Like Josh Wallace has had a very good season for Michigan. He's going to have to play the best game of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Sander still is going to have to continue to play at a high level. And the safeties... Rod Moore, he broke up a huge deep ball that mm-hmm. Alabama tried to hit in the third quarter, I believe. I trust him. Makari Page, he's going to have to play great in coverage. They're all just going to have to ball out.
Yeah.
Like, there's no mincing words. There's no extra, like, complicated thing to it.
And it's definitely going to have to be one at the line of scrimmage again, because that defensive line is going to have to get pressure, because if you don't get pressure on Michael Penix, eventually he's going to tear you apart.
Exactly.
So, that's kind of, you know, one of those scenarios where the defensive line needs to help out the DBs, basically.
Yeah, they're going to have to watch film of those games where Michael Penix didn't just straight up ball out and see what those defenses did to, like, slow down the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times where Washington's offense can go 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, and things can slow down and the confidence of the offense kind of drops.
Right.
Because it becomes so pass heavy.
And that's something that Michigan's really good at. Like we talked about before, if they get a lead, they run the ball, they slow the game down, they kind of make it boring on you. You get out of the rhythm, and that's what you need to do against Washington.
Yeah, that will be the biggest goal, trying to knock Michael Penix off his rhythm. And doing that after the game he just had, it's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so hard. He's a high-level NFL prospect that can make every throw accurately and on time.
Mm-hmm.
And his confidence is at an all-time high.
Yep.
They might have to start the game out like they did against Alabama, where the pressure is in his face nonstop. He can't get the ball out on time, and things get knocked off.
Mm-hmm.
The game plan has to get switched up a little.
Yeah.
And an advantage for Michigan, even though it is kind of unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Washington's running back got banged up.
Yeah.
Dylan Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows how much he's going to play.
Yeah.
The running game wasn't awesome to start with.
Right.
In that game, but yeah, not having your starter is going to hurt. And I think one of their DBs got hurt too. So, yeah. It's a really interesting matchup, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, two different styles, two completely different teams from different coasts.
Yep.
And there's no SEC.
That are now going to be joining forces in the big conglomerate.
Yeah. This is huge for the Big Ten. This is huge.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction?
I said it to start it. I'm taking Michigan.
Yeah, but you have a score prediction.
A score? Huh.
I don't know.
I think Michigan gets over 30.
Okay.
I will go 35-24, Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Michael Penix still hits. He hit two touchdowns in the last game. I still think there's a good chance he hits two in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be like in the third or fourth quarter when Michigan already has some control.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really think Michigan needs to come out and set that. Send some pressure after Michael Penix and get things thrown off.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he starts out hot, unless Will Johnson can make a few picks or the, yeah, you got to get some, like, force some turnover somehow.
Yeah.
If he starts out hot, it would be much better for him to start him out slow and try to, like, make him start forcing things, like taking shots that he doesn't need to take.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 35-24 Michigan.
One final thing on Michigan. Did you see their next year's schedule?
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
They got Texas week two.
Mm-hmm.
They got Oregon and USC at home. They go to Washington without Michael Penix.
Yes.
They have Will Rogers coming from Mississippi State, who's still a good passer.
I mean, think about it. Luckily, they'll play USC without Caleb Williams.
Exactly.
Oregon without Bo Nix.
But they get Dylan Gabriel. So
I know. They're,
yeah.
And these teams, I mean, big schools like this are going to reload all the time, but the way those guys were towards the end, terrifying.
It's very helpful that you have Texas, USC, and Oregon all in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
That helps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still, this may be the toughest Michigan schedule.
Mm-hmm.
One of the toughest in school history.
Yeah.
And when you're at this level, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Those types of schedules are going to happen every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And people that don't like Michigan have been begging for this for a long time.
Yeah.
They hate the fact that Michigan hasn't scheduled any even like pretty good first three game like schedules in a long time.
Even me, I'm one of those people. I get tired of it.
Listen, America's getting what they want.
Yeah.
And even opening up with Fresno State isn't easy.
Right.
Fresno State runs really good offense and they're an experienced bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not even easy.
Right. Yeah, especially as like smaller conference schools go. They're not one to mess around with.
They beat Purdue at Purdue to open the season this year.
Yeah.
If you had to predict a score, what would you say?
I think you're kind of in the right line. I think it might be 35-24?
I said 35-24.
I'm thinking more.
Listen, it could be something even closer, like 35-31.
I know.
Where like Michael Penix starts slow. And he can start slow and take off or start good and Michigan makes adjustments.
Yeah.
Either way.
But
I think Michigan's defense is good enough to slow him down for at least a quarter and a half.
Yeah. My thought is like 30-27. Like it might be just end up being close.
Michigan wins by a field goal.
Something like that. Or it could be the same scenario where like it's 30-20 or something. Washington gets a late touchdown just before the end, so it makes it look closer. That's where my thought process is. But I could see it being even closer to like a shootout kind of deal, which is kind of crazy. But
yeah, and my 35-24 score is kind of guided by the team of destiny thing.
Yeah.
For me being a Michigan fan, where if this has to be the time. Like, the fact that they finally got over the semifinal hump
mm-hmm.
and beat Nick Saban in Alabama What, besides this, like, what other time would it be?
Yep. Especially
this is the time where Michigan puts it together for like a whole game.
They're going to lose JJ. They're going to lose Blake Corum. They might lose Jim Harbaugh.
A lot of your defense is made up of a lot of seniors. Your O-line is several seniors.
Yeah.
You have draft picks all over this team,
mm-hmm,
in terms of starters.
Yeah. Oh, actually, that was the other one thing that I thought of before we wrap up or we go to the next thing. Does the way that this season ended make you feel more confident about Michigan going forward with potentially without Jim Harbaugh? The way that Sharon Moore picked up the team during the suspension and stuff like that.
I would say it does, because a lot of people think it's when Jim Harbaugh leaves, I am confident that they will hire Sharon Moore,
mm-hmm,
and that he will keep the train rolling as it is. Now, does that mean they're still going to be a well-oiled machine where every guy they bring in on defense and in the trenches, they all develop at a very high level, and you get the right four-star guys? And I don't know if it's all going to literally hit exactly like it has
right
in the past 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, because the recruiting might change a little bit.
It took a long time for them to get to what this version of Michigan football is.
Right.
It took a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I am confident they will stay at baseline a respectable version,
mm-hmm,
of Michigan football. Well-coached, not making many mistakes, led by the trenches, physical, high-level run game, and I guess basically the stereotype of Michigan football, which they played a, like, improved, higher-grade version of Michigan football,
yeah,
to get them where they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they took the old-school script, and they just added to it,
right,
which I guess was the answer all along.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sharon Moore could continue that.
Yeah. All right, so more positive news from over the weekend. The Pistons are no longer a laughingstock, per se.
They did it.
We can get our wings from Wingstop.
Listen, I'm sorry to every Wingstop worker in Detroit.
Yeah.
That had to work that Saturday night, because my God.
Yeah.
Craziness.
So the Pistons, they finally won after losing 28 straight games. If they would have lost that game, that would have been the worst losing streak in sports history since like the 50s or something like that. Baseball, hockey, basketball, it doesn't matter. It would have been the worst of all time, basically. But they got the win against the Raptors, 129-127. We just happened to be watching the Lions game together when this was going on. And from what we were watching the ESPN game cast, and I usually don't do that,
yeah,
but
which doesn't actually show the game.
No.
But it follows the play-by-play
yeah,
of what's happening.
And it stays pretty up to date, so you're almost right on regular time. And the Pistons were up like 10 or something.
With like 2 minutes left, they were up by 10.
And
or two and change or whatever.
From everything that we saw and read into, they definitely tried to lose the game. They had some late turnovers where they couldn't get the ball inbounds.
I saw several posts on Twitter, Twitter, of people saying the Pistons look like they've never tried inbounding the basketball before.
Yeah.
So you think things got scary, mm-hmm, it seemed like.
And Scotty Barnes was having a pretty rough game for the most part. Well, he decided to have like 12 points in the final quarter.
Yeah.
And
Siakam and Dennis Schroeder went off in the second half. They scored over 40 points in the last two quarters.
Yeah. So it was pretty crazy, but they got it done. They won 129-127. And then they started off the new year just like they did the rest of the year. They got blown out by the Rockets the other night. So right back onto a losing streak, but hey, they got rid of the big losing streak. So hopefully they can figure something out, make some trades, and
They did make a trade.
Do something.
But I guess we'll talk about that at another time.
They didn't make a trade.
I thought you made the Raptors.
Oh, no. I was talking about the Pistons.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the Raptors.
No. The Raptors did make a trade. I guess we can talk about it real quick. The Raptors finally traded OG Anunoby, who's been somebody's dream
child. He's been in trade talks with half the league for the past 2 years.
Yeah, everybody wants him. The Knicks finally said, let's have him. Now, the Knicks ended up trading RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley
And it's hilarious that quickly is like the main thing that Knicks fans are saddest about, which
because
sucks for RJ Barrett.
Because he's like a bench, come off the bench fire guy.
Yeah.
Which a lot of teams need and want. So I think this immediately makes the Raptors a good team again.
Yeah, the Knicks actually won their first game with OG Anunoby and Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah.
Malachi Flynn, the most important person in the trade.
Yeah.
My guy from San Diego State.
Yeah.
I think he still has a nagging injury, so he didn't play. But yeah, the Knicks won their first game.
Yeah.
With OG and
But they had to get 39 from Julius Randle, so.
It is what it is. OG played good.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Raptors definitely won the trade.
Yeah, the Knicks wanted defense and a more trusted shooter in OG Anunoby, so
yeah,
I think they're going to get that.
And now I wonder, maybe this keeps Pascal Siakam on the Raptors for another season.
He's still getting traded at some point.
You think so?
He won't be a Raptor forever.
Because he's a free agent, right? I think he's a free agent after this year, so they might just hold on to him.
True. That, I forgot about that.
Maybe let him walk, I guess. I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but if they think that RJ Barrett and Emmanuel quickly are enough to turn their team around a little bit, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah, well, back to the Pistons.
Yeah.
Kevin Knox had a great game.
He missed a dunk, though.
He did, but he also dunked on Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah.
Kay Cunningham didn't start well, finished strong.
Yep, ended up with 30.
Yeah, hit free throws, got to the free throw line, hit his free throws. Jaden Ivey. Who would have guessed, the more you play Jaden... Joey, who would have guessed that the less you play Killian Hayes and the more you play Jaden Ivey, what do you think happens, Joey?
Jaden Ivey plays better.
Hey, man, what? That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shouts out to Monty Williams and that garbage organization.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pistons got a win. The young guys look good. Jalen Duren played well.
Mm-hmm.
Good for the Pistons.
Yeah. They're still looking for their four spot. Because Beef Stew is out right now. They've been playing Bogey and Kevin Knox, which just sounds awful.
I mean, it's more shooting in the lineup, so it helps, I guess.
The nice thing, though, too, is that Jaden Ivey did, again, follow up with another good game against Houston. He had 19 points, 6 rebounds. So he's hopefully back on track.
Yeah.
The bench, kind of a mess. Alec Burks has his games here and there.
He shoots well at home and doesn't on the road.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I've seen from Alec Burks.
Mm-hmm. So Pistons, their schedule is no fun coming up. They're going to play the Jazz again, but I think they're going to be fully healthy. Then they're going to play the Warriors, Nuggets, Kings. Good luck.
Watch them beat one of them.
But they do get the Spurs January 10th.
The one everybody's waiting for.
So maybe there's a chance, but not looking great. So Hopefully the Pistons make a trade, get something done, and finish the season okay.
At this point, the goal is to not be the worst team in NBA history. They still, they could go on 3 or 4 two-game win streaks, and they wouldn't be the worst team in NBA history. Get to like 13 or 14 wins.
Yeah, that would be
nice. And you're not the worst.
Yeah.
10 more wins.
Yeah, that'd be nice. All right. And then, because the Pistons win, we had to sacrifice a Lions win on Saturday night.
It's not the Pistons. That's not who did it.
I know. Everybody's heard about it. We're not going to go on and on and on and on. We're going to try to preview more playoff implication stuff, things like that. But we were watching the Lions game along with my brother, and we were so hyped about the Taylor Decker 2-point conversion. And the thing
about 10 seconds,
I was going to say,
it looked like the game was about, it was
the craziest thing is how long it took for them to conspire and call and throw the flag that we had so much time to be like joyous and happy.
We had done like a circle around the living room.
Yeah.
We had all high fived each other. And then we looked up and there was like,
that
something
stupid
going on.
Yellow box on the TV screen that and you then, hate to see.
And then Joe Buck was like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, what's happening?
And then they immediately call ineligible player downfield or illegal touching. That's what the official said. And the whole, you know, Taylor Decker didn't report. Now the NFL put out a video today about the whole situation saying that we need players to
show that they're reporting and blah, blah, blah. It's a bunch of BS. The video is awful because it shows Taylor Decker reporting to the officials.
It shows Jared Goff pushing Taylor Decker and saying, go over there.
Yeah.
Taylor Decker goes up to him, says something. The ref looks at him, says something also, and walks away.
Yeah. And on this video that the NFL put out, they have this terrible voiceover going on, explaining the rules about how reporting works, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't make sense. It's awful. It's a bad look. I think people forget, or maybe the NFL forgot, the 2024 draft is in Detroit.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. It's going to be... Listen,
it'll be the most beautiful mess of booze after everything. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It would be even better if it like rained or it snowed in April. That would be even better.
Something.
But you know what I think the worst part of it is? The fact that Dan Campbell told them beforehand that this is something that we might do. He pretty much confirmed it with the officials of what it was going to be. So, in my opinion, even if they tried to pull a fast one, even I don't even if it wasn't reported correctly, the Lions have practiced this.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell told them what they were doing. Everybody on the field did what they were taught, what they thought was right.
Yeah.
And Dan Campbell told the refs, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, it's a bad look. My biggest problem with it all, okay, Brad Allen saw that Dan Skipper had been reporting most of the game or a couple times during the game. So then on this final play, he sees Dan Skipper running in, assumes, which we know we can't assume because you know what that does. He assumes that Dan Skipper is going to be the guy that's eligible. He's not. So he makes a mistake, a big mistake, and disregards Taylor Decker, basically. My biggest problem...
That is the mistake.
Yeah.
That... I don't think... Everybody, NFL fans understand how insane this is, but the NFL covering themselves.
Yeah.
Clearly they just,
that's my biggest problem. Brad Allen stuck to his guns after the game saying he made the correct call that Skipper was reported as eligible. He wasn't, blah, blah, blah. Just own up to your mistake. I don't know if people remember. I'm sure they do because it's infamous in Detroit. Jim Joyce made an incorrect call under Mondo Galarraga. Perfect game. He called an out.
What a callback. When it, I love this.
Was not an out. That man got death threats. That man was basically exiled from the MLB. And he was man enough to come back up to the podium, tears in his eyes, saying he made the incorrect call. And that was for an individual accolade. Now, perfect games like never happen. It's a huge deal. But it was for an individual. This is for a whole team fighting for a potential number one seed, most likely being able to lock up the two seed in what is one of their best seasons since 1993 or whatever. Just own up to the mistake. That's all we want. To keep doubling down and saying, oh, this is how it was, when all the evidence around it clearly shows Taylor Decker reporting, clearly shows Jared Goff showing him go report, Dan Skipper literally just running, not doing anything with his hands because you're supposed to do this as the reporting signal. And you can even see Taylor Decker kind of has like his hands right here. To not own up to it is the most frustrating part, I think.
The NFL is going to bury it.
Yeah. And Lions fans,
that's all they're going to do.
And Lions fans won't let it happen.
Oh, not at all. For the rest of time, this will be remembered in Detroit.
Yeah. So now, the only thing that has me fired up is the script that this could cause. Because the Lions are now basically locked into the three seed. There's some crazy scenarios they could get back into the second seed. And there's some other crazy scenarios of who they could play. They're going to play Minnesota the last game of the season. Doesn't fully matter, but I want them to just destroy the Vikings. Let's just go out with a bang, show that we're mad.
Take your anger out on the Vikings.
Right. And that will lead to us playing, most likely, the two most likely scenarios are we're going to play the Rams in the first round or the Packers. Both have huge storylines. I want the Rams for that storyline. The Lions getting over their demons a couple weeks after Michigan got over their demons. The Lions get over the Stafford era, get over the big trade, move on. Then we play Dallas at Dallas again. And I want Detroit fans to show up even more.
Take over AT&T Stadium.
And just go crazy.
Yeah.
And we beat Dallas at Dallas the way it was supposed to happen. That would be sweet. We make it to the NFC title game. At that point, again, I would love to beat the 49ers or whoever's there. But at that point, I don't really care. We did what we were supposed to do this season.
Listen, it sucks to go back to this. But honestly, if Derek Barnes wasn't afraid to get a roughing the passer penalty,
yeah,
I don't think none of this probably happens.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like in retrospect. Mm-hmm. Derek Barnes was afraid to go head on at Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Because it could end up, I don't know, a 15-yard penalty or something.
Because mm-hmm. the defense played really good other than that.
But you got to hit the quarterback, man.
Yeah.
Like, kudos to him for rebounding after that. Because mm-hmm. he had a really good game after that huge mistake.
Yeah.
But that was one of the most glaring mistakes that just seemed terrible.
Yeah.
And dumb in the moment.
The other one was not kicking the field goal. That was before the half or something like that.
Yeah.
They got the turnover. They drove down the field, couldn't get in the end zone, decided to go for it on fourth. That's one of those few times where I would have just liked to take the points so you get something out of that turnover. Didn't do it. I love going for two at the end of the game. I think that was the right call. A lot of people disagreed with when they got the penalty that they should have just kicked the extra point. I'm okay with staying aggressive. I kind of understand both sides, I guess. Luckily, Micah Parsons got an offsides, so we got a third play. The third play was very disappointing, too. Jared Goff definitely missed.
If he hit James Mitchell, it's probably
yep. a conversion. And we wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah.
And so that's where you always say, yes, there's more than one scenario that, you know, you could have gotten the win, should have gotten the win. The problem was just the way that ended, that scenario that, you know, it's not even like the team is making the mistake. It's the refs making the mistake. You would rather, like, Jared Goff overthrows Taylor Decker and they miss and they lose off that. Then you're disappointed, but you're not just outwardly upset at a ref for messing it up, if that makes sense. So, Lions, hopefully this fuels the fire and gets them going. So, we'll see. There's a lot of playoff implications going into this week 18. We were looking at it before we started the podcast. The AFC is crazy. The bottom of the NFC, it's a little bit crazy, but I don't think the NFC has those powerhouse teams at the bottom. I don't think it's as deep necessarily as what the AFC could be and how they're shaping up. Because the NFC South is really bad. It's going to be Tampa Bay or New Orleans who get in. And then the wild card spot is basically between Green Bay and Seattle. There's a couple random scenarios that could happen where Minnesota still makes it in, or New Orleans, or even Atlanta. Atlanta has the lowest odds, but there's a chance.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Literally no one. Mm-hmm. I don't even think Falcons fans want that.
Yeah.
They want this quarterback situation to be done. Like, mm-hmm.
The other problem, too, with this Dallas win is it puts Dallas ahead of Philly in the NFC East. And if they win the division, we've already shown they're, what, 15-0, 16-0 at home in the last 2 years or whatever. So to give them home field advantage basically throughout the playoffs until the NFC Championship game, potentially, really just puts an even bigger damper on it, especially after they did their Ring of Honor that night, Cowboys being America's team. It's just the Lions and Cowboys history.
I hate the Cowboys. So listen, I respect Jimmy Johnson. Mm-hmm. He's one of the few things about the Cowboys throughout their history I respect.
Yeah.
Because of what he did at Miami and then immediately jumped to the NFL and just started a dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing this for any other franchise in the NFL.
Yeah.
Why the Cowboys? Why? Why do you have to make them so special? Why does this have to be a spectacle? Why?
Yeah. The other part,
other people's Ring of Honors aren't televised like this.
Yeah. The other part, too, is Philadelphia losing. They lost to the Cardinals.
Worst loss of the season.
Which...
Worst loss of the
which
season.
Almost makes it worse because now the Cow... So then, because the Eagles lost, the winner of Cowboys and Lions basically sets who can get the second seed. Like, if the Lions would have won that game, gotten the win, they would almost surefire be... I think they would be locked in to the number two seed because Philly lost.
Yeah.
And now it's a fight for the two seed where for the Lions to get the two seed... Philly and Dallas have to lose, something like that, I believe. And then, right now they're showing. Well, yeah, they would have. I don't remember the scenario, but basically the Lions have like the hardest odds or something like that. And now Dallas gets a cakewalk matchup against Washington. So Detroit fans, we're going to be big Washington Commanders fans this weekend, just by the random chance.
Yeah, it almost seems impossible that the Commanders win this game.
Yeah.
Unless, like, Trey Lance starts and he's so rusty that he just can't get it going.
Mm-hmm.
If Dak Prescott is playing, that defense is going to do what they do. Micah Parsons is too dangerous.
Right.
They're beating the Commanders.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they'd have to pull off a miracle.
Maybe if Jacoby Brissett is healthy.
Him outdueling Dak Prescott would put a smile on my face. He definitely would.
Because he didn't play last week against the 49ers.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe Dak throws like three picks.
Yeah.
He has one of those games. This is just hoping and praying.
Right.
Odds are it doesn't happen, but
yeah,
anything is possible.
Because it's I guess it is at Washington, so
yeah.
There's a chance, but not very likely.
Yeah. Also, before we move on from the Lions, I want to say kudos to Hutch for having his best game of the season against the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. Three sacks.
Big time sacks. That showed he can get there, and it's kind of still frustrating that it took this long.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's obvious that he has the talent to do this.
Yeah.
But there's just a disconnect that still hasn't all the way come together.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed the promise he still has in that game.
Yeah.
And man, they should have won that game.
The other exciting thing, though, for this week, we are expected to get C.J. Gardner-Johnson back and Aleem McNeil back.
That's huge. Isaiah Bugs announced he's going away from the team.
He's been waived.
Yeah. I didn't see he was officially cut.
Yeah.
I saw there was just like a mutual agreement.
Yeah. So to bring Gardner Johnson and Aleem McNeil back, and they're hoping to eventually get James Houston back. They still don't know about James Houston. That's a worrying thing to me, that he might not even be ready for the first round, which stinks. But CJ Gardner Johnson and Aleem McNeil, hopefully they can get a warm-up game this weekend. Heading for the playoffs, which would be really nice. But yeah, the Lions had to cut Jason Kabinda, Isaiah Bugs, and Bruce Irvin, which I kind of was surprised. I feel like Bruce Irvin in his limited time made some plays.
Yeah.
So we'll see. So hopefully the defense gets a little healthier, looks a little better, because they did not play CeeDee Lamb very well.
Listen, Cam Sutton, he's turning into the new Jerry Jacobs.
That
play, I believe it was in the fourth quarter, where they had the Cowboys at like a 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 11,
mm-hmm.
and Cam Sutton literally wasn't even ready to like.
Yes. Get, yep.
He wasn't even right. Like in his stance yet.
Mm-hmm.
He was like looking over, pointing at stuff, not in his stance.
Yeah.
The play starts and he's just
immediately gone.
Yeah. Immediately burnt.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand how. You let that stuff happen as a veteran in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It's just confusing.
Yeah. And that's my only concern going into the playoffs.
They need CJ, DJ for the, stuff like that.
The secondary is terrifying because.
I trust the safeties.
We were
for the most part.
Yeah. But we were talking about it. When you look at the NFC, they have so many burners on wide receiver.
Yeah.
You have to play potentially Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. in the NFC Championship. Probably might see Brandon Cooks, CeeDee Lamb again. Philadelphia has A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. The Rams have Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. And even the stinking Tampa Bay Buccaneers have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans.
Listen, that rookie from Michigan State on the Packers.
Jaden Reed.
Jaden Reed is dangerous.
He's fun to watch.
So everybody they play has somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody yeah. they play.
Right. Whereas, like, you look at the AFC, Baltimore. Okay, Zay Flowers. OBJ, sometimes. Miami, definitely dangerous. Cleveland, Amari Cooper, but, you know.
Shout out to my guy David Bell. He's a possession receiver, but yeah.
If Amari Cooper's on the road, he seems to not play as well. The Kansas City Chiefs have the most drops in the NFL.
Rashee Rice might be their best receiver right now.
I think he is, easily. Buffalo, Stephon Diggs has been kind of out of the offense lately. Gabe Davis, you know, he can have his games.
Their offense just hasn't looked the same.
Right. So it's like all these guys that are good schematically against the Lions are in their conference. So they're just going to have to step it up. Again, I'm also hoping that Gardner Johnson steps up and really helps. There might be some weird scenarios where they start playing C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Melifonwu together doing different packages and stuff. I hope they get creative with their defensive play call. Yeah.
Outside of Cam Sutton getting grilled for four quarters, the defense played well.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
the line got a lot of good pressure. They made some good plays. They got stops when they needed to. They did the thing where, you know, CeeDee Lamb did his thing. He's one of the best receivers in the league. You can only stop him so much. But they definitely got torched, but they stopped mostly everybody else. So I don't know. Do you have a preference? Who would you rather see, the Rams or the Packers?
Honestly, the Rams. That sounds kind of crazy seeing like the youth of the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Packers would play like they have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I think Matt Stafford would have like some weight on his shoulders playing against the Lions,
mm-hmm.
and like having to prove that once again he can do it without Detroit, even though he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
he's a few years older after the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
He has like two guys that everybody's looking to stop: Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp.
Yeah,
even though Kyron Williams has emerged.
Yeah, but see, I think their
defense isn't the same anymore either.
I think that's the thing for me, though, is like the Rams lately have been leaning heavily on Kyron Williams. The Lions have stopped every running back this season.
Yeah.
So, like, that makes me feel good playing against almost anybody. And
this is even with Joe Barry looking like one of the worst defensive coordinators in the league.
Yeah.
For the Packers the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That offense, they're just playing with so much, like, so much swag. That phrase isn't very popular anymore.
Yeah.
I'm kind of upset that I said it. They play with a lot of, I can't think of anything.
Chutzpah.
They play with a lot of panache. Chutzpah and panache. That's what we came up with.
Yeah. Yep. So,
oh my God.
Either way, it's either going to be revenge against the Packers, revenge against the Seahawks, revenge against Matt Stafford. Like, there are storylines for the Lions, almost no matter what. So I think I would just like to take the best one and go with the Rams and just continue with this fun season. I did want to slightly mention, because we only got a couple minutes, to mention the AFC, because there's a lot of crazy stuff that could happen in the AFC. The AFC South is still wide open. Jacksonville, Indianapolis, and Houston are all at 9-7. Jacksonville does have the tiebreaker over Indianapolis and Houston. But if Jacksonville loses, the winner of Indy and Houston, because they play each other, will be the winner of the AFC South. Sunday Night Football, Miami versus Buffalo, is also for the AFC East division. So the AFC can be moved around a lot. Baltimore, Cleveland, Miami's locked into the playoffs, not their position. And Kansas City are all locked into the playoffs. Cleveland locked into the 5. Kansas City, I believe, is just locked into the 3 seed no matter what. So Baltimore, Cleveland, and Kansas City most likely benching all their guys. And Pittsburgh still has a chance to make it in if they beat Baltimore. I believe they play on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, Steelers and Baltimore play Saturday.
Yeah.
And the late game, is the late game Colts-Texans?
I think so.
which I'm more interested in that late game because the division is on the line and
a wild card spot potentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's CJ Stroud versus I really like what Shane Steichen, especially with Anthony Richardson being out, what Shane Steichen has done with that team, figuring out how to get
who are you thinking of?
Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
Figuring out how to like seamlessly put Jonathan Taylor back in with Gardner Minshew trying to gain chemistry with those young receivers.
Yep.
I love what he's done in his first year as Colts head coach. I like that team a lot.
Yeah. And Houston's been kind of a darling team.
I'm rooting for Nico Collins, the Michigan guy. Is Tank Dell playing?
No, he's out for the season.
I forgot. He tore his Achilles, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, I think Houston would have been much more favored if they had Tank Dell as well. So,
yeah, there's a lot of questionable people on both sides of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Texans, Will Anderson, Bernard, Sheldon Rankins, Robert Woods, and Noah Brown, all questionable. Colts, Kenny Moore, Braden Smith, Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly, and Chris Lemons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are disadvantages on both sides.
Yeah.
So, pretty even. But I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun because it's basically playoff games already starting. Yeah. For those guys, which will be fun. And like I said, if all of a sudden Buffalo sneaks into the 2 seed, they might be one of my Super Bowl picks again. I don't know why they draw me in every year, but
all of their mojo is kind of just fizzled out for me.
Yeah, I agree. I can see it.
Yeah, having James Cook emerge helps a lot, but that passing game, like what was that against New England?
Yeah,
what was that? I don't know, man.
Yeah. The other thing that's terrifying for me personally, is that the AFC South winner is going to get Cleveland. Cleveland, one of the hottest teams in the league right now. And if Cleveland wins that game, they play Baltimore in the second round. I have to go Ravens versus Joe Flacco.
Listen, you never thought it would happen. You got to pick one.
Yeah.
Are you picking the elite Hall of Famer Joe Flacco?
I don't know.
Or are you riding with the purple birds?
I don't know. It's going to be tough. That'll be a fun game if it comes to that, though.
MVP quarterback versus the all-time elite Ravens quarterback.
That's right.
How insane is it that Joe Flacco and David Njoku have become like a top five pairing in the second half of the season?
Yeah.
Like, Njoku has emerged because of Joe Flacco. It is football so great.
Yeah.
I love this sport so
Meanwhile,
much.
Meanwhile, they're paying $250 million for a guy to sit on the couch.
Listen. We're not speaking his name while Joe Flacco was having this run.
I don't know.
We don't speak his name.
The other thing that people have pointed out, like I heard Stephen A. Smith talking about it. Imagine if Cleveland didn't lose Nick Chubb to the season.
Man.
This team would be like behind the Ravens as favorites.
There's a reason by this year and last year in the preseason, I told you and Chris, the Browns are too well coached and too talented overall to be bad.
Yeah.
Even with like, not knowing what's going to come from quarterback. Mm-hmm. I just figured the rest of the team was like just so well-rounded that something they'd figure it out.
Yeah.
And they figured it out.
And now they found their quarterback.
Yeah. They're having a like uncharacteristic like 80s style Magic Browns run.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen something like this out of Cleveland in my life.
Yeah.
And like watching old stuff from the Browns when like they had Bernie Kosar, like they'd have these type of seasons where they would just go on runs. And then disappoint in the playoffs.
And that's
why they're going on a run.
And that's why people want to see the Lions and the Browns in the Super Bowl.
Listen, lowest rated in terms of viewers in football history, but boy, I'm there.
It'd be crazy.
I'm watching every minute.
Two teams that are known for struggling.
Yeah.
That would be crazy. So that's basically about it. Next week, what are we going to do? We're going to review Michigan's national championship game. Winning the national title for the first time in many a years.
No negativity. It was meant to be, I guess.
We're going to preview the NFL playoffs, which I think are going to be exciting this year. Because, again, I think there's a lot of storylines that could happen. We're not going to talk about the Pistons. They're
unless
not
they win
anything.
Another game.
Unless
a surprise upset.
Beat the Nuggets. Unless they make a trade or something, we'll see. But it'll probably just be all football coming up. But, yeah, this has been Views from the Sidelines, and we'll see you guys next time.
Listen, shouts out to Wingstop. Shouts out to Just shouts out to Michigan sports right now. Things are exciting outside of the Pistons. It's a fun time.